and it makes him cringe, which just makes me angrier because it's not remorse for trying to attack Warren when he was hurt, but fear of my anger.
I stared at him.
It's not all bad, he told me. It's knowing who they are, what's important to them, what makes them different, what strengths they each contribute to the pack.
He hesitated.
I'm not sure how much you'll get. If I want to, at full moon and wolf form, I can read everyone almost always. That's part of being alpha. It allows me to use the individuals to build a pack. Most of the pack gets bits and pieces, mostly things that concern them, or big things.
He gave me a little smile.
I didn't know that bringing you into the pack would work at all, you know. I couldn't have done it with a human mate, but you are always an unknown.
He looked at me intently.
You knew Mary Jo had been hurt.
I shook my head. No, I knew someone had been hurt, but I didn't know it was Mary Jo until I saw her.
Okay, he said, encouraged by my answer. It shouldn't be bad for you, then. Unless you need them, or they need you, the pack will just be a shield at your back, warmth in the storm. Our mate bond, when it settles down, will probably add a little oddity to it.
What do you mean, when it settles down? I asked him. He shrugged.
Hard to explain.
He gave me an amused look.
When I was learning how to be a wolf, I asked my teacher what mating felt like. He told me it was different for different couples, and being alpha adds a twist to it as well.
So you don't know? Because that wasn't an answer, and Adam didn't evade questions. He answered or told you he wasn't going to.
I do now, he said. Our bond,
he made a gesture with his hand, indicating something in the small space in the bathroom that lay between us,
feels to me like a bridge, like the suspension bridge over the Columbia. It has foundations and the cables and all that it needs to be a bridge, but it doesn't span the river yet.
He looked at my face and grinned.
I know it sounds stupid, but you asked. Anyway, if all you felt when Mary Jo was dying was that someone was hurt, that you caught the few who don't welcome you as part of our pack, is my fault. You felt them through me. On your own, you won't even be aware of it, unless certain conditions are met. Things like proximity, how open you are to the pack, and if the moon is full.
He grinned.
Or how grumpy you are with them.
So if I don't feel it, it shouldn't matter if they don't want me? He gave me a neutral look.
Of course it matters, but it won't be shoved on your throat every minute of the day. Mostly, I expect you'll know the ones who don't want a coyote in the pack. As Warren knows the wolves who hate what he is more than what he does.
Briefly, sorrow lit his eyes for Warren's trials, but he kept speaking.
Just as Daryl knows the wolves who resent being given orders by a black man made uppity by a good education.
He smiled, just a little.
You aren't alone. Most people are prejudiced about something. But you know, after a while, the edges wear down. You know who hated Daryl the most when he joined us, way back when we were still in New Mexico?
I raised my eyebrows in inquiry.
Arielle. She thought he was an arrogant, self-important snob.
Which he is, I observed. But he's also smart, quick, and given to small kindnesses when no one is watching.
So,
he nodded,
we are none of us perfect. And as pack, we learn to take these imperfections and make them only a small part of who we are. Let us bring you truly into our shelter, Mercedes. And the wolves who resent you will deal with it, as you will deal with the ones you don't like for whatever reason. I think, with the healing you have already done on your own, the pack can help stop your panic attacks.
Ben's rude, I said, considering it.
See, you already know most of us,
Adam said.
And Ben adores you. He doesn't quite know how to deal with it yet. He's not used to liking anyone. And liking a woman...
Ish, I said, deadpan.
Let's try again, he suggested,
and put out his hand. This time when I touched him, all I felt was skin and calluses. No warmth, no magic. He tilted his head and evaluated me sternly.
It's hard to argue with instinct, even with reason and logic, isn't it? May I knock?
What?
May I see if I can touch you first. Maybe that'll allow you to open to the pack.
It sounded harmless enough. Warily, I nodded, and I felt him, felt his spirit or something touch me. It wasn't like when I'd called Stefan. That had been as intimate as talking was. Not very much. Adam's touch reminded me more of the presence I felt sometimes in church. But this was unmistakably Adam and not God. And because it was Adam, I let him in, accepting him into my secret heart. Something settled into place with a rightness that rang in my soul. Then the floodgates opened. The next time I was conscious of anything real, I was back in Adam's lap, but on his bedroom floor instead of in the bathroom. A number of the pack surrounded us and stood with their hands linked. My head hurt like the one and only time I'd gotten truly drunk, only much worse.
"We're gonna have to work on your filtering skills, Mercy," said Adam, his voice sounding a little rough.
As if that was a signal, the pack broke apart and became individuals again, though I hadn't been aware they were anything else until it was gone. Something stopped, and my head didn't hurt so much. Uncomfortable at being on the floor when everyone else was on their feet, I rolled forward and tried to use my hands to get leverage so I could stand.
"Not so fast," Samuel murmured.
He hadn't been one of the circle. I'd have noticed him. But he pushed his way through to the front of the line. He gave me a hand and pulled until I was on my feet. "I'm sorry," I told Adam, knowing something bad had happened, but I couldn't quite focus on what it had been.
"Nothing to be sorry for, Mercy," Samuel assured me with a little edge to his voice. "Adam is old enough to know better than to draw his mate into the pack at the same time as he seals your mate bond. Sort of like teaching a baby to swim in the ocean during a tsunami."
Adam hadn't gotten up when I did, and when I looked at him, his face was grayish underneath his tan. He had his eyes closed, and he was sitting as if moving would be very painful.
"Not your fault, Mercy. I asked you to open up to me."
"What happened?" I asked him. Adam opened his eyes, and they were as yellow as I'd ever seen them.
"Full throttle overload," he said. "Someone probably should call Daryl and Warren and make sure they're all right. They stepped in without notice and helped tuck you back into your own skin."
"I don't remember," I said warily.
"Good," said Samuel. "Fortunately for us all, the mind has a way of protecting itself." "You went from fully closed to fully open," Adam said. "And when you opened yourself up to me, the mate bond settled in too. Before I realized what happened, you..."
He waved his hands.
"Sort of spread out through the pack bonds." "Like Napoleon trying to take over Russia," said Samuel. "There just wasn't enough of you to go around."
I remembered a bit then. I'd been swimming, drowning in memories and thoughts that weren't mine. They'd flowed over me, around me, and through me like a river of ice, stripping me raw as the shards passed by. It had been cold and dark. I couldn't breathe. I heard Adam calling my name.
"Aurelie answered," reported Ben from the hallway. "She says Daryl is fine. Warren's not picking up, so I called his boy toy cell. Boy will check up and call me back."
"I bet you didn't call him a boy toy to his face," I said.
"You can effing believe I did," answered Ben with injured dignity. "You should have heard what he called me."
Kyle, Warren's human boyfriend, who in his day job was a barracuda divorce lawyer, had a tongue that could be as razor-sharp as his mind. I'd bet money on the outcome of any verbal skirmish between Kyle and Ben, and it wouldn't be on Ben.
"Is Dad all right?" asked Jessie.
The wolves moved aside almost sheepishly to let her through, and I realized they must have kept her away while the matter was still in doubt. Judging by Adam's eyes, he held onto control by a gnat's hair, so keeping his vulnerable human daughter away had been a good idea. But I knew Jessie. I wouldn't have wanted to have been the one keeping her back. Adam got hastily to his feet and almost didn't lean on Mary Jo, who'd put her hand out when he swayed.
"I'm just fine," he told his daughter and gave her a quick hug.
"Jessie's the one who called Samuel," Mary Jo told him. "We didn't even think of it. He told us what to do."
"Jessie's the bomb," I said with conviction.
She gave me a shaky grin.
"The trick," Samuel said to me, "is to join with the pack and with Adam without losing yourself in them. It's instinctive for the werewolves, but I expect you're gonna have to work on it."
In the end, I went home for dinner, slipping out almost unnoticed in the gathering that followed our close call. I needed some time alone. Adam saw me leave, but made no move to stop me. He knew I'd be back. There was a bowl of tuna fish, pickles, and mayo in the fridge, so I made a sandwich and fed what was left to the cat. As she ate with delicate haste, I called Kyle's cell phone. "Mmm?" The sound was so relaxed, I pulled the phone away from my ears to make sure it was Kyle's phone I'd gotten. But there it was on the little screen. Kyle's cell. "Kyle? I was calling to see how Warren was."
"Sorry, Mercy," Kyle laughed, and I heard water splash. "We're in the hot tub. He's fine. How are you? Ben said you were all right."
"Fine. Warren?"
"Was passed out in the hallway where he'd evidently been headed to the kitchen with an empty glass."
"Wasn't empty when I was carrying it."
Warren's warm, southern-touched voice sounded amused.
"Ah," said Kyle. "I didn't notice much besides Warren, but he woke up in a few minutes."
"Cold water in your face does that," observed Warren, amused.
"But he was stiff and sore. Thus, the hot tub."
"Tell him I'm sorry," I told Kyle.
"Nothing to be sorry for," said Warren. "Pack magic can be tricky sometimes. That's what Adam, Daryl, and I are for, sweetheart. I don't feel you in the pack anymore. Problems?"
"Probably not," I told him. "Samuel says I just burned out the circuit for a while. It should come back online soon."
"Apparently it wasn't necessary that I pass anything on," said Kyle dryly.
A car pulled into the driveway. A Mercedes, I thought. But I didn't recognize the individual car. "Give Warren a hug for me instead," I said. "And enjoy the hot tub." I hung up before Kyle could say something outrageous in response and went to the door to see who was there. Corbin, Amber's husband, was just coming up the steps. He looked disconcerted when I opened the door before he knocked. He also looked upset, his tie askew, his cheeks unshaven. "Corbin?" I said. I couldn't imagine why he was here when a phone was so much easier. "What's wrong?" He recovered from his momentary hesitation and all but hopped up the last step. He put out a hand, and I noticed he was wearing leather driving gloves and holding something odd-looking. That's all I had time to notice before he hit me with the taser. Tasers are becoming commonplace among police departments, though I'd never actually seen one in the flesh before. Somewhere on YouTube there is a camera phone video showing what happened to a student who broke some rule or other in a university library. He was tasered, then tasered again because he wouldn't get up when they told him to. It hurt. It hurt like I didn't know what. I dropped to the ground and lay there frozen while Corbin frisked me. He went through my pockets, dropping my cell phone to the porch. He grabbed my shoulders and knees and tried to jerk lift me. I'm a lot heavier than I look. Muscle will do that. And he was no werewolf, just a desperate man whispering, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." I'd make sure he was sorry, I thought through the haze of pain. I don't get mad, I get even was more of a credo than a cliché to me. The people I'd seen tasered were only knocked out of commission for a few seconds. Even the kid in the library had been able to make noise. I was absolutely helpless, and I didn't know why. I tried touching the pack or Adam for help. I found where the connection should have been, but the taser had nothing on the pain when I tried to force contact. My head hurt so badly it felt like my ears should be bleeding. It was still daylight, so calling Stefan wasn't going to be much help. The second time, he got me up and took me to his car. His trunk popped with a beep, and he dumped me in it. My head bounced off the floor a couple of times. When I got out of this, Amber was going to be a widow. Scrabbling fingers pulled my hands together behind my back, and I recognized the signature sound of a zip tie. He used another on my ankles. Prying my mouth open, he stuffed it with a sock that tasted of fabric softener and smelled faintly of amber. Then he wrapped what felt like an ace bandage around that.
"It's Chad," he told me, eyes wild. "He has Chad."
I caught a glimpse of the fresh bite mark in his neck, just before he shut the trunk. Chapter 11. It must have been at least 15 minutes before the effects wore off and I began to function again. The first conclusion I came to was that whatever he'd hit me with had been no normal taser. No way in hell. Ill and shaking, I huddled in the vibrating trunk and tried to come up with a plan. I couldn't shift yet, but before we reached Spokane, I'd be able to. and the zip ties weren't tight enough to hold the coyote. The car was newer, and I could see the tab that would release the trunk, so I wasn't trapped. The realization did a lot to stop my panic. No matter what, I wouldn't have to face Blackwood. I relaxed into the floor of the trunk and tried to figure out why the vampire wanted me badly enough to ruin his lawyer to get me. It might be that he didn't value Corbin, but I'd gotten the feeling that their association was of long standing. Was he trying to take over the Tri-Cities as well as Spokane? Take me down and hold me hostage to force the wolves to act against Marsilia? It had seemed like a possibility, had it been just yesterday. But with the warfare between wolf and vampire at an end in the Tri-Cities, kidnapping me to influence Adam seemed like a stupid move to make just now. And a vampire who was stupid didn't successfully hold a city against all comers. There was a chance, just barely, that he hadn't heard what happened. It was that chance that meant I couldn't dismiss the theory outright. And Marsilia was down three of her most powerful vampires. If he wanted to move against her, now was the time to strike at her. Kidnapping me wasn't a strike. It was, at best, an end run, especially now that Marsilia had declared a truce with the wolves. Kidnapping me, I judged, would do nothing except send Adam to Marsilia with an offer of alliance. See, it was stupid to take me, if his purpose was to take over Marsilia's territory. Since Blackwood couldn't be that dumb, and I found myself indisputably lying in Corbin's trunk, I was inclined to think we had been wrong about Blackwood's intentions. So what did he want with me? It could be as simple as pride. He'd claimed me as food, maybe as he claimed anyone who came to Amber's house. Then Stefan came along and took me from him. The theory had the benefit of conforming to the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. It meant that Blackwood didn't have anything to do with Chad's ghost. It supposed that it was sheer dumb bad luck that I had gone blithely into his hunting ground when I went to Amber's to look for a ghost. Vampires are arrogant and territorial. It was not only possible but probable that having fed from me, he would believe I belonged to him. If he was possessive enough, and his holding the city for himself presupposed that Blackwood was very possessive, it was entirely reasonable that he would send a minion to fetch me. It was a neat, simple solution, and it didn't depend upon my being anything special. Ego, Bran liked to say, got in the way of truth more often than anything else. Trouble was, it still didn't quite fit. Being alone in the trunk with nothing better to do gave me time to analyze the whole thing. From the beginning, Amber's first approach had bothered me. Upon reflection, it struck me as even more wrong. The Amber with whom I'd had a water fight, who gave dinner parties for her husband's clients, would be neither so thoughtless or gauche as to approach me to help her with a ghost because she'd read about my rape, the rape of a near stranger, really, after all these years, in the newspaper. I hadn't seen her in a long time. But in retrospect, there had been an awkwardness in her manner that was unlike either the woman she'd been or the one she'd grown to be. It might have been explained by the odd situation, but I thought it more probable that she'd been sent. Which left the question, why did Blackwood want me? What could he have known about me before he required me to travel to Amber's? The newspapers announced that I was dating a werewolf. Amber knew I saw ghosts. I sucked in a deep breath. She also knew I'd been raised with a foster family in Montana until I was 16. It wasn't something I'd kept hidden, just the part about my foster family being werewolves, except that time when I was drunk. But among the werewolves, the knowledge of the Walker, the coyote shapeshifter who'd been raised by Bran, was well known. So say that he didn't know anything about me until the newspaper articles. Say Amber looked at the newspaper and said, "Goodness, I know her. I wonder if she might not be useful helping us deal with our ghost. She said she could see ghosts." Blackwood said to himself, a girl whose boyfriend is the alpha of the Tri-Cities, a girl with an affinity for ghosts. And, being much older than me, he might have known more about walkers than I did. So he put two and two together and got, "Hey, I wonder if she might not be that walker who was raised by Bran a few years ago." So he asked Amber if I was from Montana, and she told him I was raised by a foster family there. Maybe he wanted something from a walker. Here I had an uncomfortable moment remembering Stefan telling me about the Master of Milan, who was addicted to the blood of werewolves. But Stefan had taken blood from me and hadn't seemed to be much affected by it. Anyway, suppose Blackwood wanted a walker, and so he sent Amber to find me and persuade me to come to Spokane. I didn't like it as well as the kiss theory, but that was mostly because it meant that he wouldn't quit hunting me just because I'd escaped from this car. It meant that he'd just keep coming until he got what he wanted, or he was killed. It fit what I knew. Walkers are rare. If there are other walkers around, I've never met one. So if he figured out what I was and he wanted one, it would be logical for him to come after me. The question that left me was, what did he want with a walker? The tingling in my arms and legs had faded and left only a dogged ache behind. It was time to escape. And then I really thought about what Corbin had said. He has Chad. Corbin had kidnapped me because Blackwood had Chad. I wondered what Blackwood would do if Corbin came back and I'd escaped him. Maybe he'd just send him out again. But I remembered Marsilia's indifference when she'd ordered Estelle's man killed, when she'd killed all of Stefan's people. She was hurt that he was still angry with her after he'd figured out what she had done. Maybe she had no understanding of Stefan's attachment to his people, because humans were food. Maybe Blackwood would simply kill Chad. I couldn't take that chance. Abruptly, the sharp edge of terror made itself at home in my innards because I really was trapped. I couldn't escape, not when it could mean that Chad would die. Dry-mouthed, I tried to sort out my tools. There was the fairy staff, of course. It wasn't there at the moment, but eventually it would come to me. It was accounted by the Fae to be a powerful artifact. If only vampires were afraid of sheep. I couldn't find the pack or Adam. Samuel had said that the connections would reset. He hadn't given me a timeline, and I hadn't been anxious to repeat the experience, so I hadn't asked. Adam said that distance made the connection thinner. I remembered that Samuel had once run all the way to Texas to escape his father, and it had worked. But Spokane was a lot closer to the Tri-Cities than Texas was to Montana. So maybe if I stalled Blackwood long enough, I could call the whole pack in to save me, again. After dark, and it would soon be after dark, there was Stefan. I could call to him, and he'd come to me, just as he had when Marsilia had asked me to do it. But I'd have to do it before Blackwood forced me to exchange blood with him again. I assumed that what had worked to break Blackwood's hold would work in the reverse. And, as with calling in the pack, I would only be calling him in to die. If he didn't judge himself to be a match for Blackwood, and he hadn't, I could only accept his opinion. He knew more about Blackwood than I did. If I left, I left a boy I liked to die at the hands of a monster. If I stayed, I would be putting myself in the hands of a monster. The monster. Maybe he didn't intend to kill me. I could make myself believe that easily. Less easy to dismiss was the already demonstrated desire of his to make me his puppet. I could always leave. I shifted and told myself that it was because I didn't want to face Blackwood while I was tied up and helpless. As Coyote, I wiggled out of the bonds and gag. Then I shifted back, got dressed, and fingered the release tab on the trunk's lock. So I rode in the trunk of Corbin's car all the way to Spokane. When the car slowed and left the smooth growl of the interstate for the stop-and-go of city traffic, I straightened my clothes. My fingers touched a stick. The silver and wood staff was tucked under my cheek. I stroked it, because it made me feel better.
"You'd better hide yourself, my pretty," I murmured in a fake pirate accent, "or you'll be put in his treasure room and never let see the light of day."
Something under my ear chimed. We took a hard corner, and I lost track of where the staff was. I hoped it had listened to me and left. It wouldn't be much help against a vampire, and I didn't want it to come to harm while it was in my care.
"Now you're talking to inanimate objects," I said out loud, "and believing they are listening to you. Get a grip, Mercy."
The car slowed to a crawl, then stopped. I heard the clang of chain and metal on pavement. Then the car moved slowly forward. It sounded like Blackwood's gates were a little more upscale than Marsilia's. Did vampires worry about things like that? I rolled up, crossed my legs, and bent over until my chin rested on my heels. When Corbin opened the trunk, I simply sat up. It must have looked as though I'd been doing it all along. I hoped that it would draw his attention away from the contents of the trunk so he wouldn't notice the staff, if it was still in there at all. "Blackwood has Chad?" I asked him. His mouth opened, but no sound came out. "Look," I said, climbing out of the trunk with less grace than I'd planned. Damn taser or stun gun or whatever it had been. "We don't have much time. I need to know what the situation is. You said he had Chad. Exactly what did he tell you to do? Did he tell you why he wanted me?"
"He has Chad," Corbin said.
He closed his eyes and his face flushed red, like a weightlifter after a great effort. His voice came slowly.
"I get you when you are alone, no one around. Not your roommate, not your boyfriend. He would tell me when. I bring you back. My son lives."
"What does he want me for?" I asked, while still absorbing that Blackwood had known when I was alone. I couldn't believe someone could have been following me. Even if I hadn't detected them, there was still Adam and Samuel. He shook his head.
"Don't know."
He reached out and grabbed my wrist.
"I have to take you now."
"Fine," I said, and my heart rate doubled. Even now, I thought with a quick glance at the gate and the 10-foot stone walls, even now I could break away and run. But there was Chad.
"Mercy," he said, forcing his voice. "One more thing. He wanted me to tell you about Chad, so you would come."
"Just because you knew it was a trap didn't mean you could stay out if the bait was good enough." With a ragged sigh, I decided that one deaf boy with the courage to face down a ghost should inspire me to a tenth of his courage. My course laid out, I took a good look at the geography of Blackwood's trap for me. It was dark, but I can see in the dark. Blackwood's house was smaller than Adam's, smaller even than Amber's, though it was meticulously crafted out of warm-colored stone. The grounds encompassed maybe 5 or 6 acres of what had once been a garden of roses, but it had been a few years since any gardener had touched these. He would have another house, I thought, one suitably grand, with a professional garden and lawn service that kept it beautiful. There he would receive his business guests. This place, with its neglected and overgrown gardens, was his home. What did it tell me about him? Other than that he liked quality over size and preferred privacy to beauty or order. The walls surrounding the grounds were older than the house, made of quarried stone and hand-laid without mortar. The gate was wrought iron and ornate. His house wasn't really small. It just looked undersized for the presentation it was given. Doubtless the house it had replaced had been huge and better suited to the property, if not to the vampire. Corbin paused in front of the door.
"Run if you can," he said. "It isn't right. Not your problem."
"Blackwood has made it my problem," I told him. I walked in front of him and pushed open the door. "Hey, honey, I'm home," I announced in my best 50s movie starlet voice. Kyle, I felt, would have approved of the voice, but not the wardrobe. My shirt was going on a day and a half. The jeans, I didn't remember how long I'd been wearing the jeans, not much longer than the shirt. The entryway was empty, but not for long.
"Mercedes Thompson, my dear," said the vampire. "Welcome to my home at long last."
He glanced at Corbin.
"You have served. Go rest, my dear guest."
Corbin hesitated.
"Chad?"
The vampire had been looking at me like I was something that delighted him. Maybe he needed some breakfast. Corbin's interruption caused a flash of irritation to sweep briefly across his face.
"Have you not completed the mission I gave you? What harm could the boy come to if that is true? Now go rest."
I let all thoughts of Corbin drift from me. His fate, his son's fate, Amber's fate were beyond my control right now. I could afford only to concentrate on the here and now. It was a trick Bran had taught to us all on our first hunt. Not to worry about what had been or what would be, just the now. Not what a human might feel knowing she'd killed a rabbit that had never done her any harm. that she'd killed it with teeth and claws and eaten it raw with relish, including parts her human side would rather not have known were inside a soft and fuzzy bunny. So I forgot about the bunny, about what the results of tonight might be, and focused on the here and now. I forced back the panic that wanted to stop my breath and thought, here and now. The vampire had given up his business suit. Like most of the vampires I'd met, he was more comfortable in clothing of other eras. Werewolves learn to go with the times, so they don't fall into the temptation of living in the past. I can place women's fashions of the past 100 years within about 10 years, and before that to the nearest century. Men's clothing not so much, especially when they are not formal clothes. The button fly on his cotton pants told me it was before zippers were used much. His shirt was dark brown with a tunic neck that would allow it to be pulled over his head, so there were no buttons on it. "Know your prey," Bran had told us. "Observe." "James Blackwood," I said. "You know, when Corbin introduced us, I couldn't believe my ears." He smiled, pleased.
"I scared you." But then he frowned. "You are not frightened now."
"Rabbit," I thought hard. And made the mistake of meeting his eyes the way I had that little bunny so long ago, as I had Aurelie's last night. But neither Aurelie nor the bunny had been a vampire. I woke up tucked into a twin-sized bed, and no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't see beyond that moment when he'd met my eyes. The room was mostly dark, with no sign of a window to be seen. The only light came from a nightlight plugged into a wall socket next to a door. I threw back the covers and saw that he'd stripped me to my panties. Shuddering, I dropped to my knees, remembering other things.
"Tim is dead," I said,
and the sound came out in a growl worthy of Adam. And once I'd heard it and knew it for a fact, I realized I didn't smell of sex the way that Amber had. I did, however, smell of blood. I reached up to my neck and found the first set of bite marks, the second, and a new third just a centimeter to the left of the second. Stefan's had healed. I shook a little in relief that it wasn't worse, then a little more in anger that didn't quite hide how frightened I was. But relief and anger wouldn't leave me helpless in the middle of a panic attack. The door was locked, and he had left me with nothing to pick it with. The light switch worked, but it didn't show me anything I hadn't seen. A plastic bin that held only my jeans and T-shirt. There was a quarter and the letter for Stefan in my pants pockets, but he'd taken the pair of screws I'd collected while trying to fix the woman's clutch at the rest stop on the way to Amber's house. The bed was a stack of foam mattress pads that would yield nothing I could make into weapon or tool.
"His prey never escapes," whispered a voice in my ear.
I froze where I knelt beside the bed. There was no one else in the room with me.
"I should know it," he said. "I've watched them try."
I turned slowly around but saw nothing, but the smell of blood was growing stronger. "Was it you at the boy's house?" I asked.
"Poor boy,"
said the voice sadly, but it was more solid now.
"Poor boy with the yellow car. I wish I had a yellow car."
Ghosts are odd things. The trick would be getting all the information I could without driving it away by asking something that conflicted with its understanding of the world. This one seemed pretty cognizant for a ghost. "Do you follow Blackwood's orders?" I asked. I saw him, just for an instant. A young man above 16 but not yet 20, wearing a red flannel shirt and button-up canvas pants.
"I'm not the only one who must do as he tells," the voice said, though the apparition just stared at me without moving its lips.
And he was gone before I could ask him where Chad and Corbin were, or if Amber was here. I should have asked Corbin. All that my nose told me was that the air filtration system he had on his HVAC system was excellent, and the filter had been dosed lightly with cinnamon oil. I wondered if that had been done on my account, or if he just liked cinnamon. The things in the room, plastic bin and bed, pillow and bedding, were brand new. So were the paint and the carpet. I pulled on my shirt and pants, regretting the underwire bra he'd taken. I could maybe have managed something with the underwire. I've jimmied my share of car door locks and a few house locks along the way as well. The shoes I didn't mind so much. Someone knocked tentatively at the door. I hadn't heard anyone walking. Maybe it was the ghost. The scrape of a lock, and the door opened. Amber opened the door and said,
"Silly Mercy, why did you lock yourself in?"
Her voice was as light as her smile, but something wild lurked behind her eyes, something very close to a wolf. Vampire, I wondered. I'd met one of Stefan's menagerie who was well on his way to vampirehood. Or maybe it was just the part of Amber who knew what was going on. "I didn't," I told her. "Blackwood did." She smelled funny, but the cinnamon kept me from pinpointing it.
"Silly," she said again. "Why would he do that?"
Her hair looked as if she hadn't combed it since the last time I'd seen her, and her striped shirt was buttoned one button off. "I don't know," I told her. But she had changed subjects already.
"I have dinner ready. You're supposed to join us for dinner."
"Us?" She laughed, but there was no smile in her eyes, just a trapped beast growing wild with frustration.
"Why, Corbin, Chad, and Jim, of course."
She turned to lead the way, and I noticed she was limping badly. "Are you hurt?" I asked her.
"No. Why do you ask?"
"Never mind," I said gently, because I'd noticed something else. "Don't worry about it." She wasn't breathing. "Here and now," I counseled myself. "No fear, no rage, just observation. Know your enemy." Rot. That's what I'd been smelling. That first hint that a steak's been in the fridge too long. She was dead and walking, but she wasn't a ghost. The word that occurred to me was zombie. Vampires, Stefan had once told me, have different talents. He and Marsilia could vanish and reappear somewhere else. There were vampires who could move things without touching them. This one had power over the dead. Ghosts who obeyed him.
"No one escapes," he'd told me. "Not even in death."
I followed Amber up a long flight of stairs to the main floor of the house. We arrived in a broad swath of space that was both dining room, kitchen, and living room. It was daylight, morning from the position of the sun, maybe 10 o'clock or so. But it was dinner that was set at the table. A roast, pork, my nose belatedly told me, sat splendidly adorned with roasted carrots and potatoes, a pitcher of ice water, a bottle of wine, and a loaf of sliced homemade bread. The table was big enough to seat 8, but there were only 5 chairs. Corbin and Chad were sitting next to each other, with their backs to us on the only side set with 2 places. The remaining 3 chairs were obviously of the same set, but one, the one opposite Corbin and Chad, had a padded backrest and arms. I sat down next to Chad.
"But Mercy, that's my place," Amber said.
I looked at the boy's tear-stained face and Corbin's blank one. He, at least, was still breathing.
"Hey, you know I like kids," I told her. "You get 'em all the time."
Blackwood still hadn't arrived.
"Does Jim speak ASL?" I asked Amber.
Her face went blank.
"I can't answer any questions about Jim. You'll have to ask him."
She blinked a couple of times. Then she smiled at someone just behind me.
"No, I don't," said Blackwood.
"You don't speak ASL?"
I looked over my shoulder, not incidentally letting Chad see my lips.
"Me either. It was one of those things I always meant to learn."
"Indeed."
I'd amused him, it seems. He sat down in the armchair and gestured to Amber to take the other.
"She's dead," I told him. "You broke her."
He went very still.
"She serves me still."
"Does she? Looks more like a puppet. I bet she's more work and trouble dead than she was alive."
Poor Amber. But I couldn't let him see my grief. Focus on this room and survival.
"So why do you keep her around when she's broken?"
Without allowing him time to answer, I bowed my head and said a quiet prayer over the food and asked for help and wisdom while I was at it. I didn't get an answer, but I had the feeling someone might be listening. And I hoped it wasn't just the ghost. The vampire was staring at me when I finished. Bad manners, I know, I said, taking a slice of bread and buttering it. It smelled good, so I put it down on the plate in front of Chad with a thumbs-up sign. But Chad can't pray out loud for the rest of us. Amber is dead, and Corbin... I tilted my head to look at Chad's father, who hadn't moved since I'd come into the room except for the gentle rise and fall of his chest. Corbin's not in any shape to pray, and you're a vampire. God's not going to listen to anything you have to say. I took a second slice of bread and buttered it. Unexpectedly, the vampire threw back his head and laughed, his fangs sharp and pointy. I tried not to think of them in my neck. It wasn't nearly as creepy as Amber laughing right along with him. A cold hand touched the back of my neck and was gone, but not before someone whispered, "Careful," in my ear. I hated it when ghosts snuck up on me. Chad grabbed my knee, his eyes widening. Had he seen the ghost? I shook my head at him while Blackwood wiped his dry eyes with his napkin.
"You have always been something of a scamp, haven't you?" Blackwood said. "Tell me, did Tag ever discover who it was that stole all of his shoelaces?"
His words slipped inside me like a knife, and I did my best not to react. Tag was a wolf in Bran's pack. He'd never left Montana, and only he and I knew about the shoelace incident. He'd found me hiding from Bran's wrath. I don't remember what I'd done. And when I wouldn't come on my own, he'd taken off his bootlaces and made a collar and leash out of them for Coyote me. Then he dragged me through Bran's house to the study. He knew who'd stolen his shoelaces, all right. And until I left for Portland, I'd given him shoelaces every holiday, and he'd laugh. No way any of Bran's wolves were spying for the vampires. I hid my thoughts with a couple of mouthfuls of bread. When I could swallow, I said, "Great bread, Amber. Did you make it yourself?" Nothing I could say about the shoelaces struck me as useful. So I changed the subject to food. Amber could always be counted upon to talk about nutrition. Death wouldn't change that.
"Yes," she told me. "All whole grains. Jim has taken me for his cook and housekeeper. If only I hadn't ruined it for him."
Yeah, poor Jim. Amber had forced him to kill her so he wouldn't get a new cook.
"Hush," Blackwood said.
I turned my head so I sort of faced Blackwood.
"Yeah," I said. "That won't work anymore. Even a human nose is going to smell rotting flesh in a few days. Not what you want in a cook. Not that you need a cook."
I took another bite of bread. "So how long have you been watching me?" I asked.
"I despaired of ever finding another walker," he told me. "Imagine my joy when I heard that the Maroc had taken one under his wing."
"Yeah, well," I said, "it wouldn't have worked very well for you if I'd stayed." Ghosts, I thought. He'd use ghosts to watch me.
"I'm not worried about werewolves," said Blackwood. "Did Corbin or Amber tell you what my business is?"
"Nope. Your name never crossed their lips once you were gone." It was the truth, but I saw his mouth tighten. He didn't like that. Didn't like his pets not paying attention to him. It was the first sign of weakness I'd seen. I wasn't sure if it would be useful or not, but I'd take what I could get. "Know your enemy."
"I deal with specialty ammunition," he said, looking at me through narrowed eyes. "Most of it top-secret government stuff. I have, for instance, been very successful with a variety of ammunition designed for killing werewolves. I have, among other things, a silver version of the old Black Talon. Silver is a lousy metal for bullets. It doesn't expand well. Instead of mushrooming, this one opens up like a flower."
He spread his hand so it looked like a starfish.
"And then there are those very interesting tranquilizer darts of Jerry Wallace's design. Now that was a surprise. I'd never have thought of DMSO as a delivery system for the silver, or a tranquilizer gun as a delivery system. But then, his father was a vet. This is why tools may be useful."
"You knew Jerry Wallace?" I asked, because I couldn't help it. I took another bite, as if my stomach weren't clenched, so he wouldn't think that the answer mattered too much.
"He came to me first," Blackwood said, "but it didn't suit me to do as he asked. The Maroc is a bit larger target than I wanted to take on.
He smiled apologetically.
I am essentially a lazy creature, so my maker used to say. I sent Jerry on his way with an idea about building a super-weapon against werewolves in some convoluted scheme sure to fail, and no memory of coming to me at all. Imagine my surprise when the boy actually came up with something interesting.
He smiled gently at me. You need to watch Bran closer, I told him. I grabbed a pitcher of water and poured it. He's more subtle, and it makes that omniscient thing work better for him. If you tell everyone everything you know, they don't wonder about things you don't tell them. Bran, I shrugged. You just know he knows what you're thinking.
Amber, said the vampire, make sure your husband and the boy who is not his son eat their dinner, would you?
Of course.
Chad's cold hand on my knee squeezed very tight. You say that like it's a revelation, I told Blackwood. You need to work on your verbal ammunition, too. Corbin has always known that Chad's not his biological son. That doesn't matter to him at all. Chad's still his son. The stem of the water glass the vampire was holding broke. He set the pieces very carefully on his empty plate.
You aren't afraid enough of me, he said very carefully. Perhaps it is time to instruct you further.
Fine, I said. Thank you for the meal, Amber. Take care of yourselves, Corbin and Chad. I stood up and lifted an inquiring eyebrow. He thought it was stupidity that I wasn't afraid of him. But if you shiver in fear in a pack of werewolves, that's really stupid. If you're scared enough, even a wolf with good control starts having problems. If his control isn't strong, well, let's just say that I learned to be very good at burying my fear. Pushing Blackwood wasn't stupid either. If he'd killed me the first time, well, at least it would have been a quick death. But the longer he let it go on, the more I knew he needed me. I couldn't imagine for what, but he needed me for something. My bad luck, he was taking it on as a challenge. I wondered what he thought would scare me more than Amber before I caught a good tight hold on my thoughts. There was no future. Just the vampire and me standing by the table. Come, he said, and led the way back down the stairway. How is it that you can walk in the daylight? I asked him. I've never heard of a vampire who could run around during the day.
You are what you eat, he said obscurely. My maker used to say that. Man ist, was man ist. She wouldn't let me feed off drunkards or people who consume tobacco.
He laughed, and I wouldn't let myself think of it as sinister.
Amber reminds me a bit of her, so concerned with nutrition. Neither of them was wrong, but my maker didn't understand the full implications of what she said.
He laughed again.
Until I consumed her.
The door to the room I'd awoken in was open. He stopped and turned off the light as we passed.
Mustn't waste electricity.
And then he opened another door to a much bigger room, a room of cages. It smelled like sewage, disease, and death. Most of the cages were empty, but there was a man curled naked on the floor of one of the cages.
You see, Mercedes, he said, you aren't the first rare creature to be my guest. This is an oak man. I've had him for... How long have you belonged to me, Donald Greenleaf?
The Fae stirred and raised his face off the cement floor. Once he must have been a formidable figure. Oakmen, I remembered from the old book I'd borrowed, were not tall, no more than 4 feet, but they were stout as a good oaken table. This one was little more than skin and bones. In a voice as dry as high summer in the Tri-Cities, he said,
40 years, and 12, 2 seasons more, and 18 days.
Oakmen, said Blackwood smugly, like the oaks they are named after, eat only the sunlight.
You are what you eat indeed.
I've never tried to see if I could live on light, he said. But he keeps me from burning. Don't you, Donald Greenleaf?
It is my honor to bear that burden, said the Fae in a hopeless voice, his face to the floor.
So you kidnapped me so you could turn into a coyote? I asked incredulously. The vampire just smiled and escorted me to a largish cage with a bed. There was also a bucket from which the odor of sewage was emanating. It smelled like Corbin, Chad, and Amber.
I can keep you alive for a long time, the vampire said.
He grabbed me by the back of my neck and shoved my face against the cage while he stood behind me.
Maybe even all of your natural life. What, no smart comment?
He didn't see the faint figure that stood before me with her finger over her pursed mouth. She looked as if she'd been somewhere between 60 and 100 years old when she died. Like Santa's wife, she was all rounded and sweet. Quiet, that finger said, or maybe just, don't let on you can see me. Blackwood didn't see her, even though he had been using the other ghost as an errand boy. I wondered what it meant. She smelled like blood, too. He put me in the cage next to the one that he had been keeping Chad and Corbin in. Presumably he didn't need to confine Amber anymore.
This could have been so much more pleasant for you, he said.
The woman and her hushing finger were gone, so I gave my tongue free rein. Tell that to Amber, he smiled, showing fangs.
She enjoyed it. I'll give you one last chance. Be cooperative, and I'll let you stay in the other room.
Maybe I could get out through the roof of the other room, but somehow I didn't think so. The cage in the Maroc's house looks just like all the rest of the bedrooms. The bars are set behind the drywall. I leaned against the far side of my cage, the one that backed up to the cement outer wall. Tell me why you can't just order me around. Make me cooperate. Like Corbin. He shrugged.
You figure it out.
He locked the door with a key and used the same key to open the oak man's door. The Fae whimpered as he was dragged out of the cage.
I can't feed from you every day, Mercy, Blackwood said. Not if I want to keep you around. The last walker I had died 50 years ago, but I kept him for 63 years. I take care of what is mine.
Yeah, I bet Amber would agree with that one. Blackwood knelt on the floor where the oak man lay curled in a fetal position. The Fae was staring at me with large black eyes. He didn't fight when Blackwood, with a look meant for me, grabbed his leg and bit down on the artery in the Fae's groin to feed.
The oak said, the Fae said in English-accented Welsh, Mercy would free me in the harvest season.
I stared at him, and he smiled before the vampire did something painful to him, and he closed his eyes to endure. If he'd understood Welsh, I was sure he'd have done something more extreme. How the oak man knew I'd understand him, I didn't know. There are two ways to free a prisoner. Escape is the first. I had the feeling that the oak man was looking for the second. When he finished, the oak man was barely conscious, and Blackwood looked 12 years younger. Vampires weren't supposed to do that, but I didn't know any vampires who fed from Fae, either. He picked up the oak man with no visible effort and tossed him over his shoulder.
Let's get you a little sun, shall we? Blackwood sounded cheery.
The door to the room closed behind him, and a woman's trembly voice said,
It's because you're too much for him right now, dear. He did try to make you his servant, but your ties to the wolves and to that other vampire, and how did you manage that clever girl, have blocked him? It won't be forever. Eventually, he'll exchange enough blood for you to be his, but not for a few months yet.
Mrs. Claw's ghost stood in the cage with her back to me, looking at the door that had closed behind Blackwood. What does he want from me? I asked her. She turned and smiled at me.
Why? Me, dear.
She had fangs. You're a vampire, I said.
I was, she agreed. It isn't the usual thing, I admit, though that young man you met earlier is one as well. We're tied to James, both his,
John was the only vampire James ever made, and I blush to admit that James is my fault.
Your fault?
He was always so kind, so attentive, a nice young man, I thought. Then one night, one of my other children showed me the Merucha James had captured. One of the Merrow folk, dear.
That faint accent was Cockney or Irish, I thought, but so faint I couldn't be sure.
Well, she said, sounding exasperated, we just don't do that, dear. First off, the Fae aren't a people to toy with. Secondly, whatever we exchange blood with could become vampire. When they're magical folk, the results can be unpleasant.
She shook her head.
Well, when I confronted him,
she looked down at herself ruefully.
He killed me. I haunted him, followed him from home all the way to here, which wasn't the smartest idea I've ever had. When he took that other man, the one who was like you, well, then he saw me and found he still had use for this old woman.
I had no idea why she was telling me so much, unless she was lonely. I almost felt sorry for her. Then she licked her lips and said,
I could help you.
Vampires are evil.
It was almost as if the Maroc himself were whispering in my ear. I raised an eyebrow.
If you feed me, I'll tell you what to do.
She smiled, her fangs carefully concealed.
Just a drop or two, love. I'm only a ghost. It wouldn't take much.
Chapter 12.
I could just take it from you while you sleep, dear, the ghost said. I was only trying to make it a gift. If you give it as a gift, I can help you.
She looked like the sort of woman you'd hire to watch your children, I thought. Sweet and loving, a little complacent.
You won't, I growled, and I felt a little pop of something. Something I'd done.
Her eyes widened, and she backtracked.
Of course not, dearie. Of course not, if you don't want me to.
She tried to cover it up. But I'd done something. I'd felt it once before, in the bathroom at Amber's house when I told the ghost to leave Chad alone. Magic. It wasn't the magic the Fae used, or the witches, but it was magic. I could smell it.
Tell me, I said, trying to put some push behind it, imitating the authority that Adam wore closer than any of his well-tailored shirts. How did Blackwood manage the haunting at Amber's house? Was it you?
Her lips tightened in frustration, and her eyes lit up like the vampire she had been. But she answered me.
No. It was the boy. James's little experiment.
Outside of the cages and out of reach was a table stacked with cardboard boxes. A pile of 5-gallon buckets, 6 or 8 of them, was on one corner. They fell over with a crash and rolled to the drain in the center of the room.
That's what you were,
she called in a vicious tone that sounded wrong coming out of that grandmotherly face.
He made you vampire and played with you until he was bored. Then he killed you and kept playing until your body rotted away.
Like Blackwood had done to Amber, I thought. Except he hadn't managed to make her into a vampire before he'd turned her into a zombie.
Here and now, I told myself. Don't waste energy on what you can't change just now.
The buckets quit rolling, and the whole room was silent, except for my own breathing. She shook herself briskly.
Never fall in love, she told me. It makes you weak.
I couldn't tell if she was talking about herself, or the dead boy, or even Blackwood, but I had other things I was more interested in. If I could just get her to answer my questions.
Tell me, I said, exactly why Blackwood wants me.
You are rude, dear. Didn't that old wolf teach you any manners?
Tell me, I said, how Blackwood thinks to use me.
she hissed, showing her fangs. I met her gaze, dominating her as if she were a wolf.
Tell me.
She looked away, drew herself up and smoothed her skirts, as if she were nervous instead of angry, but I knew better.
He is what he eats,
she said finally when I didn't back down.
He told you so. I'd never heard of it before. How should I have known what he was doing? I thought he was feeding from it because of the taste, but he supped its power down as he drank its blood, just as he will yours, so that he can use me as he wants to.
And she was gone. I stared after her. Blackwood was feeding from me, and he'd gain... what? I drew in a breath.
No.
The ability to do just what I had been doing, controlling a ghost. If she'd stuck around, I'd have asked her a dozen more questions, but she wasn't the only ghost around here. Hey, I said softly. She's gone now. You can come out. He smelled a little differently than she did, though mostly they both smelled like stale blood. It was a